Blog Talk Radio.
I said, friend, let me get that for you, as he rolled his wheelchair toward the door of the restaurant I was going in. I helped the old fella through the door. I could see that his hat said he served in World War II. I shook his hand and said, friend, let me buy dinner for you. He said, son, I wish everyone felt like you do. I watched a tear roll from his eyes. He said, grace. And as he sat there and he talked to God, my heart was in my throat. As I heard him ask, we'd all find a better way. And he said, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They've taken the U right out of the USA and broke the right arm off of the Statue of Liberty. Put out the torch that lights our way. Then they say that it's all politically correct. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left.
Guidance is suggested.
All right, all right. Here we go with another show. Welcome, everybody, to Distracted with, what are we going to call it now? Was it Distracted with Bikers and Gibbs? We've added Brian to the mix, but if we say Distracted with Bikers and Gibbs and Allen, we sound like a law firm doing a podcast. I don't know. What do you got going on tonight?
I don't think we can do that. Oh, that's like Dewey, Cheatham, and Howell.
Oh, my God.
I am your host, William Wiggerson, a.k.a. whatever name I'm using this week, here with the Distracted, where we talk about all the news that isn't news for some reason, with my other host here, Daryl, and Brian. How are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Barbara's still in the shop. I'm at home trying to handle business, trying to learn this dashboard here. But other than that, I'm good, listening to finally the – we got a new speaker of the house. See how long that lasts. And then, you know, I got a friend of mine that he's from Libya. I talked to him about some things, too. So other than that, though, man, hey, I'm blessed to be here. I'm glad we're on the air. Glad you're here, Brian.
Yeah, you noticed that on the screen, you're Daryl Brahma Bull Gibbs.
Oh, I might change that again later.
You're or something?
Huh?
Does this go back to your pizza delivery stripper days in New York?
Why you gotta keep bringing that up? Why, yes it does.
Oh, how about you, Brian?
Memories.
What do you got going on out there? What part of the world are you in, Brian?
Oh, I'm in Oregon right now. Living the dream, one nightmare at a time. Of course, I had a load that I was supposed to pick up on Friday. It was great load, teen wide, and then it canceled.
Oh, that sucks. I know how that
usually happens to the good ones.
Yeah. So hopefully they'll find something. Maybe I won't have to bounce all the way up to Canada.
Yeah, did it really, like, cancel, or is this one of those deals where when the freight market is going down, they send you a note saying that it canceled, but they really found somebody to do it for cheaper?
No, it's one of our regular customers, they push the date is what they ended up doing. They don't need it, or rather, the machinery ain't going to be ready in time. So, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, you got to love that. Got to love that. I was trying to get Carla to come down here and do her her wacky, weird news segment that she does, but she said she's not interested tonight. She's watching a college soccer game from our daughter's team, even though she's was put out for the rest of the season due to her injuries earlier on. She's still watching the game, so I guess there's still a chance for a conference playoff anyway. They're out of the NCAA tournament this year. They just, you know, couldn't pull it together with their main goalie, well, pretty much the only goalie they actually have on the roster, going out with an injury so early in the season. That definitely didn't help things along. And, they lost a whole bunch. A bunch of seniors graduated last year, so it's a really young and upcoming team. A lot of freshman players, but I'm sure they'll get it in gear next year, for just in time for Kayla's senior year, believe it or not. But man, we got some stuff to get into tonight, and I slid in here so far sideways. I you guys don't even realize. After I sit there and queued up the intro video for our show, I forgot to hit that little button that says go live. And so our entire video intro didn't even go out across the social media platforms. And just a reminder, for those that are listening to us over Blog Talk Radio, you can catch us live streaming video on Malcolm Twitter. X Twitter. That is on Bikerson Live at Bikerson Digital Media. Or is it Bikerson Digital Media at Bikerson Live? Maybe Bikerson Digital Media at Bikerson Live. Or, of course, you can catch our YouTube channel, which is Distracted with Bikerson Gibbs on YouTube. And please, if you want to check us out there, take a moment to hit that subscribe button. Maybe give us a thumbs up or two on our videos. We are streaming live on there now. We just we had no countdown intro. Right about the time our show was going live on Blog Talk, it suddenly occurred to me that I never hit the go live button for the video stream. So not a big deal. We want just pretty much launched right into it. But Daryl, I know you had some things that were on your mind regarding the situation of the world with Israel and Palestine.
Well, okay, one of the things they're talking about is dealing with the blockage for fuel. And Israel is saying that, you know, Hamas is holding up the fuel. Palestine said they're running out of fuel. And so, you know, I've kind of decided to look into it a little bit. And the news shows they had a aerial view of the storage tanks, and there's 12 storage tanks. And usually the average that you store, those tanks can hold like 42,000 gallons of crude oil. So basically 23,000 barrels per day. I mean, yeah, holds about 42,000 gallons of crude. So this has been going on for 18 days.
42,000 gallons or 42,000 barrels?
Gallons. If you send it to U.S. because U.S. you can turn it into, wait a minute, no, barrels. You're right, barrels. And So 100. Usually 100 barrels usually is equated to 42 U.S. gallons. That's what that's equated to. But they're saying that they're running out of fuel. And on one part, I'm looking at, okay, the average use over there in the Gaza Strip, they use 276,000 barrels a day. And you times it by 18, that's 144,000 barrels that they use. So there should be, you know, now that is all 12 are full. 504,000 barrels, you know, they're running out. They still have oil. Now, my thing is, you know, if anybody can come on and tell me they have a better idea or think this is wrong or not, if Hamas, if they're really taking these stockpiles of oil, you know, for these trucks coming in, how hard is it to rig, you know, have a couple of drones flying, rig the fuel trucks up, you know, say you're gonna lose four fuel trucks, send a great big shipment across to see if they're really doing it, and if they are, if they do seal it, go ahead and blow up the smithereens, videotape it, and show Palestine people your Hamas people are screwing you over. You know, instead of just saying, well, they're getting the fuel, well, then show footage of it. There's something that you can do to show people that's what they're doing. So that's one take I have on it, if, you know, somebody can say something on that. And another thing is, I talked to a friend of mine. He's from Libya, and they had this great big in September 11th of 2023 in Derna, Libya. They had the two dams break, and, you know, people, neighborhoods was washed out to the ocean. And a point that he made was very good. He said, when you have a natural disaster, everyone, doesn't matter if you're Arab, if you're a Jew, if you're a Samaritan, if you're an Arab, Berber, that they call them, American, you know, no matter what your tribe is or your ethnicity, you always come together on national disasters. So if you can do that with national disasters, why can't Israel and Palestine needs to get rid of Hamas and sit down and talk to each other? Those are the points I have on that. So if anybody else would like to throw in on that, I'd be more than happy to hear that. I think other people would too.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun.
Brian. I haven't been up to date with the news this week. I've been doing too much of the construction stuff.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to think of a diplomatic way to say this. The issue when it comes to Israel and Hamas and so on and so forth, it's really difficult to negotiate with the people that want to kill you. Like, there
right.
is no middle ground in that one. And I know history, so I've been following it for a little while, if that makes any sense. And a lot of people keep arguing this notion of, you know, who started the war, who blah, 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 and who goes back further, and when did all this start, and so on and so forth. I follow Tim Pool, and he kind of goes down that rabbit hole, if you will, as to when did all the fighting really start. Well, I could tell you when the fighting really started, but nobody's really going to like it, because the person who threw the first punch, oddly enough, is the same person who threw the first punch this time.
Thank you.
Muslims have it in their religion. It is in their core documents. They do not like Jews. Their entire this notion of coexisting. Yeah, I know you guys have seen the stickers, you know, where it spells out coexist and it uses religious symbols of all types. If anybody were to actually dig into that, they're going to understand almost immediately. There's a handful of those symbols that they use that cannot, by virtue of their very existence, coexist with anybody. Anybody who says that Islam can coexist with another religion is just fooling themselves. It's literally
yep.
written into their laws. It is their founding documents. They cannot coexist with any other religion. And so you have the Jews who, they just want to be left alone for the most part. You can convert to Judaism if you want, but they're not actively trying to get you to convert. They don't care.
It's quite the opposite.
Whereas
I don't think they like converts.
It's kind of a mixed bag. You have some that say they don't want any converts at all, and then you have some others that are like, yeah, sure, come on in. So it's kind of like the Amish, if you will. They're not actively trying to convert anybody, but they will have converts on occasion. And then you have the Muslims who, quite literally, you're going to either pay us a tax or we kill you, or you convert or we kill you. That is literally their entire history. So you want to talk about where this all comes from. They threw the first punch 1,400 years ago, and now here they are doing the same thing. Now, what's hilarious about this is all this could have been fixed back with the Palestine Mandate in 1948, and yes. They chose not to. They chose not to. And they've had opportunities since 1948 and several different times to fix the problem, and they continually choose to say, we either want all of it or we're going to break it so nobody can have it.
But also on that, also what you're saying with that, with the 1948, that's also when the Arabs jumping Israel, all these nations, they ended up winning against Israel. And I believe either it was England or it was France. Somebody came in, one of the allies came in and helped Israel. But basically Israel fought them off. And Israel ended up gaining the upper hand on all this. And so with any type of war, you're going to lose, you know, whoever's the winner is going to gain ground. The loser is going to lose ground. And like you said before, they have plenty of time to sit down and talk to Israel about this. But no, if you notice, the news doesn't cover that. You know, we have these people in legislation. They don't say anything. And then, and nothing against people who are pro-Palestine. I got nothing against that. But the truth of meaning is, if you're going to mention that, you know, you're going to talk about hate Israel and start killing everybody. Well, but how about when Israel opened up their arms and said, hey, you know what, we want to talk, let's figure this out, and you have your people in Palestine, especially Hamas, who refuses to sit down and talk to Israel, and Hamas, even in their description of themselves of what they are going to do, they just outright want to violently go against Israel. But then you have all these people, they are, you know, they're saying bad things about Israel, but Israel is the one who's protecting themselves, and Israel has every right to.
Well, despite what it might sound like, I'm not actually pro-Israel, not pro-Hamas or Palestine
right.
either, for that matter. But, I mean, you got to, when it comes down to these kind of conflicts, you got to look at each side as openly saying they want. You have one side that just says, stop bombing us. Stop sending in these terrorists. And you have the other side that says, quite literally, quote, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. They literally want to wipe the nation of Israel off the map. That is their
right.
entire goal. And so it's like you have one side that's like, dude, just chill, stop. Like, we don't want none of this. And you have the other side that I mean, they're taking their own pipes that they use for infrastructure to get the houses water and making rockets out of them. You
yep.
cannot reason with insanity. And that's exactly what we have here. Well, I guess I should
you know, what,
it's not necessarily. Say again?
What I find most interesting about this whole, you know, river to the sea chant that's been going on and some of the other rhetoric and all of these liberal organizations, or I'm not going to call them liberal. They're not liberal. Liberals are tolerant, and these are leftists, Marxists, calling themselves liberal Democrats, but they're not. But what I find most interesting is so many of them have come forward in support of Palestine, in support of Hamas. And the irony is so thick because the same people that called you a Nazi because you didn't want your first or second grade kid to have a book describing the proper use of butt plugs available in the library. They called you a Nazi because you didn't want your child, young child, reading about butt plugs. And those same people are now coming out, a lot of them, in support of essentially the eradication of the Jews. Like, do they understand what the Nazis are? How can you sit there and point at other people and call them Nazis while simultaneously supporting the eradication of the Jews?
It's better than that, though, even. It's better than that, even. And here's what I find absolutely hilarious about this whole nonsense is you get a lot of these groups like LGBTQRST and whatever, and so on and so forth, that are supporting Hamas. Do they not realize what happens to that community in Gaza, in the West Bank?
Yep.
Now, here's what the funniest part about all this is. You know what happens to those communities in Israel? Like, okay, if you're gay, lesbian, bisexual, whatever the hell, trisexual, it doesn't matter. I will challenge you. You can either go to Israel or you can go to Palestine, quote-unquote Palestine, so West Bank or Gaza, and live for a week. But you have to live your sexuality. Which one are you going to choose?
But see, you know they won't do it.
Well, I know they won't, but if they wanted to survive, they're going to pick Israel. So it's like you're literally actively supporting the very people that want to kill you. Like I said before, you can't negotiate with people that want to kill you.
I mean, that would be like Wells Fargo supporting Jesse James. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, that's pretty much exactly what the thing is. I mean, it is Wells Fargo supporting Jesse James, in essence. The worst part is you can't explain that to some of these people because they see everything as oppression Olympics, and they don't know the whole story, and so it comes out, Israel's being mean and picking on these poor guys. Never mind, they used parachutes and hang gliders and everything else to go in and massacre a bunch of people at a music festival. I mean, they probably shouldn't have done that, but they've got good reason, sure. Come on now. Come up with a
better reason. I like the defense they offered, that they weren't, that wasn't really their objective to attack the music festival, that they were paragliding in to hit some other target, but the music festival was just kind of there. It's kind of like, oh, well, you know, we just kind of stumbled across them and thought we'd just pull off a quick massacre on our way to the real target.
Yeah.
I don't see how that is hardly a justification, you know. But what do you guys
Well, you notice
about?
The news doesn't cover that.
What's
I can
that?
Say, that kind of makes
of course,
it worse.
What was that, Mike?
What do you guys think about this whole situation? And especially now, because we're saying that Iran is backing, you know, was backing supplying Hamas with rockets, which I don't know if that's true or if Iran is, if they're a scapegoat for whoever it was that marketed or trafficked a bunch of our weapons from Afghanistan. Is Iran a scapegoat? Cover-up type situation, or is Iran really at fault for helping to arm Hamas? And this whole thing of us apparently gearing up now to go to war with Iran, I mean, how much does all of this play into the bigger picture? Because I feel like we're setting up the chessboard for World War III. As a matter of fact, I think in the history books or whatever, I'm sure we won't have books in the future, in the history files of the future, when they talk about World War III, I think by 2023 they will have said we were already in World War III. I think it really started as soon as NATO got involved with the whole Russian-Ukrainian war. And now we've had sanctions, and there's been attacks. I mean, this isn't a cold war at this point. I mean, missiles are already flying, bombings are already happening, nations are already aligning with nations against other nations that are aligning together. If you go back and you read the history of World War III in the year 2060. I'm fully convinced it'll tell you that World War III started in 2022. What do you guys think?
You have two things there. You have Iran and then you have World War III. And I completely agree with you on the World War III thing. But the Iran thing, it's a little bit more complex and complicated. I know. That's everybody's favorite answer. It's more nuanced than that. But maybe make this make a little bit of sense. Both of you guys are at least somewhat familiar with Christianity. And so if I say something about the second coming of Christ, you guys probably know what I'm talking about. Fair assumption?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair. Yeah.
So let's say that you had this, you belong to this weird sect of Christianity that believed that the only way Christ will come back the second time is if you make the world a hell. Like you have to make the world a complete and utter hell. And you have to make certain things happen. If you're in control of a nation and you now have a nuke because a president before or a couple presidents before was an idiot. So you now have a nuke and you know you have to make the world a living hell in order for Christ to come back again. Are you a madman for creating the conditions for that to happen?
But
my answer
on that
is no.
Part.
Now I'm using Christianity for a reason because I'll tie it.
Right.
I'll explain where this is coming from. If that's your mindset, then no, you're not a madman. You are a religious zealot that's trying to bring about the second coming of Christ. Now, here's why this is important when I talk about Iran. They believe in the 12th Imam. They believe in a coming Imam who is basically, it's not Christ, okay? So don't take it that way. But it's ushering in the end of the world. And they are responsible for making the world, in essence, a living hell so that the end of the world can happen. They're not mad. They're not crazy. They're religious zealots, absolutely. So right now, they're, like you said, setting up a chessboard, if you will, so this can happen. And the rest of us are thinking that they're being rational, calm, cool, collected, rational. We're not thinking of them as being religious zealots that want this to happen. We're thinking that they don't want, you know, nukes to go off. Meanwhile, they're sitting over there going, all right, a nuke, an extra thing we can use to make this party get started. So I'm not so sure that...
You fucking
Iran
crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
Probably. I'm not sure they're being scapegoated, but the other side of the coin is I think we need to put ourselves in their headspace. They want this war. They literally think they're going to win this war. So I'm not so sure they're being scapegoated.
Well,
very
interesting. Let me say this out. For anybody, for our listening audience, if you want to call in, got a question, a comment, concern, that guest call-in line number is 516-387-1733. We'd love to hear from our listening audience. Be careful if you call in too many times. We may actually punish you by making you a co-host on the show. But that guest number, again, is 516-387-1733. Give us a call. Weigh in on this whole conversation here about World War III, Hamas, Israel, Palestine. Which, by the way, is not a country. I don't know how many people realize that, but there is no country called Palestine.
No, because they refused to be a country in 1948.
Yep, 1948.
Right,
and
for those not
60s,
you know,
and
then Israel. The nation of Israel was created, you know, in 1948, I believe, was the year, after World War II, essentially as a Jewish state, a place for Jews to go and have their own country where they would be safe. I don't know that the safety part of it has held up so well, but essentially, yeah, what Hamas won. And yes, there have been a lot of disputes about territory over in that part of the world. But essentially, Hamas, the river to the sea, they want the entire nation of Israel eradicated, gone, its people decimated, killed. If that's not anti-Semitic, I don't know what is. I've seen a lot of things that have been branded with the label anti-Semitic that I felt were really a stretch. But I don't think asking for the, if you're on a quest for the complete eradication of a Jewish nation, I don't see how that can be conflated as anything but anti-Semitic. Daryl, what do you?
I agree with you 100% on that. I mean, because you know the things like you said, they label anti-Semitic. You look at it like that's not, this is anti-Semitic, you know. And anybody that sits back and say I support people that just want to eradicate another race, that makes you no better than the freaking KKK. Makes you know better than what abortion was set up for, because remember, abortion was set up to eradicate or reduce our numbers. That was the KKK. That was their thing. They were there to eradicate us or reduce our numbers. But then you got all these people, you're pissed off about that, but you don't get pissed off about this chant of wanting to destroy and kill everyone in Israel. And I will say this, to me, Hamas, you're a bunch of chicken shit fools, because if you got to sit behind, if you got to fight somebody, you want to pick a fight, and you sit back and you attack people that are unarmed and hide between women and children, throw your guns in hospitals and stuff, you're not, there's nothing manly about you, you know, period. And people in Palestine, you need to get rid of those stupid people because they're not there for you. But then someone needs to have enough balls up in Palestine to stand up and say, you know what, we can't be like this anymore. And to the point that you made, Brian, about, you know, the coming of Christ, you know, like they said, you have to be, I'm sorry, but you got to be damn stone crazy to think a war is going to bring God. God's going to come back on his due time. We don't know, as they say in the Bible, you don't know the day, the time, the hour when he's going to come back. And if people think that starting another world war, because we've been through two world wars, that he's going to come back, he's the one who's going to bring down fire, not us. It's going to be God. So, you know, that's the one thing I don't like about some of these religious people. They take things too freaking far. When they read their own, you know, the Bible, or they read the Quran or whatever it is they read, and they sit back and they turn it where they make an excuse for them to go out and kill people. And then you got these other people that'll turn around who sits back and supports them, but then at the same time, they're turning around, and if you say something hateful, like you said, like you mentioned, the LGB, M-O-U-S-T, alphabet soup thing, they sit back and they support this hatred for another race. But wait a minute, aren't these the same people who are crying and whining about other people when they sit back and say they don't like their ways, or they don't like that they're pushing their ideology on our kids, and then they're sitting back crying? I mean, I find that freaking hilarious. And you know, you made a good point. So LGB people, if you want to, there you go, you have a choice, go to Israel or go to Palestine. I bet you this much, you won't go to Palestine. You're going to walk your butt over to Israel because they're going to save you. But yet, you're going to go to the people that you want to save you, but you want to support the people that would rather kill you and then try to eradicate all the Jewish people. You see how much that doesn't even make any kind of freaking sense.
I was going to say, it's like that saying, you know, the forest kept voting for the axe because the handle was made out of wood and it was just like them. Well, sometimes similarities are only skin deep, if you will.
Yep.
Right. Now, Daryl, you also mentioned that I was going to say, you mentioned there was some sort of, while we're talking about, you know, hate crimes and incidents and racism and those things. You mentioned that there was some sort of incident that took place out there in Colorado. And I have no idea what you were referring to, because, again, I have pretty much just been to my construction shop, coming home, having dinner, and going to bed. But what was this incident you were talking about?
All right, and y'all bear with me on this. I'm not going to mention names or names of buildings and stuff, but here's the thing. I had a friend of mine, you know, he gave me a call, and, you know, when somebody give you a call on the phone and you look at the answer, you know, it's something that you're like, okay, maybe, you know, I can get to it, because I was getting ready to work on something. But they kept calling. So eventually you're going to think it's a 911 thing, because your friend is calling and it's like, okay, something is going on. So I call.
Right.
My friend, he's on the phone. I mean, And I'm like, okay, calm down. What are you talking about? And so, you know, there's this grocery store. And there's a line full of kids. They're black kids or brown kids or Negroes, African-American, whatever you want to call it. And so they're in line. And he's yelling and hollering and yelling and hollering and, you know, and saying, you know, they're not letting any of these kids in into the store and blah, blah. Okay, now I'm thinking rationally. I'm like, okay, there got to be something that's going on with this. You know, they're just not going to say, okay, no kids come into the store. Now, granted, we're in the school season. It's during their lunch break. And so another friend of mine, I called them and we were talking, and they said, well, how come they just don't hire more security guards? And I said, well, it really doesn't work that way in retail. I said, the head department has to look at things. Corporate has to look at things. And if the money and if it's warranted, they'll bring extra help. But then I said, look at it on this end too. If you have the security guard that is in that establishment that's there to enforce the law or the rules, and then that establishment does not fully back up those security guards, what is the security guard supposed to do? So at the end of all this, which I already knew what it was, but I wanted to double check and make sure, and this is all over the nation, if I own a store, I would do the same daggone thing, because you have all these kids that decide they want to do, you know, come in, not all, but unfortunately, you have some bad actors that sit up there and they do a lot of shoplifting. So what is the store supposed to do? You know, the store's got to do something. So, and I even see it at some of the truck stops. I see it in all neighborhoods. So just in case all you people are going to just start this racial stuff of they're only doing it to poor people and neighborhoods of color, no. I see them in all neighborhoods. I also see them in the rich neighborhoods where they say no more than 3 students. Some of them will even say even further, no more than 3 students. You cannot have your backpacks in the store. 3 in, 3 out. There you go. That's all over the United States. So why isn't it that we can sit back and we can make an assumption of, you know, we have these kids in line, and probably one of the kids said, you know, they're not letting us in. But as adults, we should calmly, not irrationally, calmly say, see what's going on and look at it and say, okay, there's a reason why 3 in, 3 out. How come these schools that we have, they're not teaching these kids, you know what, there's repercussions for what you do. And if you're one of these dumb kids that's going to go to a store and steal, then you're going to get punished. But also on the other end, and this is something that we can have a story later on. What about these parents? What are you teaching your kids? If your kids got caught stealing, what do? You sit back and say, oh, it's okay, and they continue stealing? So that tells me you have no control over your house. You're not teaching your kids any ethics, and they don't respect you anyway. So when do we start straightening this up? Because I bet you a lot of those people in the stores, they probably voted the legislation that was in to say, let's go lighter on laws, because of race and because they're underprivileged and stuff like that. But then who pays for it? We do. Who pays for it? Who gets labeled for it? You have races that get labeled for it. You know, you have good kids are good people out there. They just want to do the right thing. But no, they get lumped in with all these knuckleheads that decide, well, you know, the law doesn't pertain to me. Because I remember when I was a police officer, shoplifting, you get to this level, you're going to have a record. But all of a sudden now we have the Democrats and these liberals. They say, oh, you know, we feel sorry for you Negroes and for you poor white folks. So we're going to raise it up here so nothing will happen to you. So we raise a higher amount. The only thing you've done, just said to everybody, let's go ahead and steal whatever we want. Let's go ahead and get a flash mob and let's steal what we want. When do we come to a point when we say, okay, let's solve the problem. Let's sit down and figure out what we need to do and start voting people in who wants to tell folks, you know what, you will now be responsible for your actions. Goes all the way up to the school board, all the way down to the parents, even goes all the way up to our governor, which here in Colorado.
You know what? Okay, we just lost Daryl, it looks like, on Blog Talk. Not sure what happened there. I don't think the liberals that are in power or the leftists in power, I don't think they actually have sympathy for people of color when it comes to dismissing their crimes. Rather, I think they want these policies that will enable and encourage more crime to be committed, especially amongst those communities, to keep the stereotype alive. I think they are encouraging any bad behavior of a minority person so that they become enablers just to keep that division going. I think it's a means of distracting people from, again, from uniting. Because the last thing they want, they do not want white people and people of color, which I don't really like even using those terms. No one is truly white. There are no black people. All of us exist as various shades of brown. If you were to take the skin color of any person alive and go to Home Depot and have your skin color matched, you would essentially come out with some shade of brown, whether it was a really, really light shade of brown or a really, really dark shade of brown, or maybe a shade of brown that had a little bit of a slightly yellow tint to it or whatever. But we're all shades of brown, and that's just the truth. Anyway, without going into all that, there's also been a lot of changes that have taken place over the years within the school systems. When us Gen Xers were in school, there was no leaving the school grounds for your lunch break. Once you got to school in the morning, you were there for the whole day until school got out. You took your lunch there in the cafeteria with all the other students in order to get there in time in the morning to go to a convenience store near the school. Well, that would require that you actually get out of bed and get to the school on time. All right, I see Daryl's back. And what has changed is the fact that now we have all these students being released. They're being given their, I don't know what it is, their 45 minutes, their hour for lunch, that they are allowed to leave the campus now. And as opposed to, say, the end of school, when everybody gets out at the same time, well, they don't want to run to the local convenience store. Some of them might. Some of them have other things to do. Some of them are going to football practice. Some of them are going to whatever, band practice, choir practice. They may be going to meet with their friends to go off and do whatever. They're not going to all mob the convenience store across the street because school's out now. and they got other things to do. But when you have this sudden surge of students that only have a limited amount of time, 45 minutes for lunch, let's say, you know, they're going to run to that nearest convenience store, that restaurant. And so this is a relatively new thing that's only started happening within the last, you know, decade or so, maybe a little over a decade. And so it's a new thing. Now you got all these students massing up. They're all running to these stores at the same time. And it's not just the shoplifting. In addition to the shoplifting, there's also the disruption of, you know, this little store that's been serving its customers not having 50 or 60 rambunctious kids all coming in at the same time. It's disrupting their business. And even the backpacking, again, it's not just the shoplifting aspect. Because of their backpacks being on, a lot of them are turning. They're knocking things off shelves. It's just kind of general chaos when they show up. And so that's why a lot of these businesses, and yes, I can tell you, having raised kids in a very wealthy, pretty much liberal, and very predominantly white school district, that even stores in that area, in that neighborhood, had these same rules, a lot of the ones that were close to the school, saying, hey, no more than two or three students, whatever. So, yeah, I'm with you, Daryl. I don't think it's a race thing. I think it's a somebody thought it was a good idea to send these kids off away from the school grounds for a limited amount of time to just create havoc on the community near the school in the middle of their day. It maybe wasn't such a good idea. But and I know you missed most of that, Daryl. I'm not sure what happened. You dropped out on video and off of Blog Talk, but you're back now. So I don't know. Brian, what do you think of this whole thing? We'll play like Tosh.0 here. Is it racist? Is it racist that these stores are shutting these kids down on their lunch break?
Well, no, I don't think so. Now, I'm a little bit younger than both of you by a little bit, but 20 years ago when I was in school, high school, we didn't have a cafeteria, and it had been that way from design. So the entire time the school had been there, high school, you went home for lunch, or you went to a restaurant or something like that. But I remember 20 years ago, we had those sorts of rules. Two or three students in at a time, and that was it. It cut down on the disruption. It cut down on potential of shoplifting. And I lived in a Hispanic community. So when I say Hispanic, I don't mean like there's a few. I mean like 97% Hispanic. You know, there were three white kids that graduated when I did, including myself, you know. What are they doing, being racist against themselves? But more to the point, though, I think that Daryl hit the nail on the head, though, when he was talking about something. We need to hold these parents responsible. You know, and I think what ends up happening, you know, kind of going back to the name of the show is Distracted, we have got so far away from what a parent's job is. And we think that all the parent does is pay for the stuff and get them to school. And that's it. That's not what you do as a parent. I have our youngest just started school this year. And he came home. He has a bad habit of putting stuff in his pocket. Like, you know, he's playing with a toy or something, he puts it in his pocket. It's not that big of a deal because it's usually his own toy or we're at a cousin's house, so it doesn't really matter. Well, he came home one day and he had a couple toys from the school in his pocket. Now, the soft thing to do is, well, now, Waylon, we have to make sure. No, that's not what we did at our house. We told him, you will, firstly, you're going to tell the teacher what you did. Accident or not, doesn't matter. You're going to tell the teacher that you stole these. You're going to then return them. I am then going to check, because if you did not, I am going to bust your ass, and you're not going to be able to sit down for a week. We're talking about cheap toys. It doesn't matter. The point is, you don't steal. That's the point.
Right.
You don't steal, accidentally or otherwise. It's not your friend's responsibility to get the toy back. It's your responsibility to give it back to them. It's not the teacher's responsibility to make sure you don't have the toy. It's your responsibility to return. So we're starting very young these principals? Where are these other parents? Where are they? And don't give me that crap. I'm too busy. You don't understand. Cupcake, I work 100 hours a week. I get home once a month. If I can do the parenting, so can you with your 40-hour-week job. Kiss my ass. Sorry. I'll get off my soapbox now.
Well, okay. Daryl, wait. I got you up on mic, right? Yeah, unmute your phone, Daryl. I think you get your phone muted. Nope, still not hearing you.
You have to
get your mic open. I'm telling you, we just get nailed with them. But one thing you didn't hear, Daryl, while you were having your technical difficulties there, was that I mentioned that I don't think the leftists actually have sympathy for the – okay, he just dropped again. No reason to give him the explanation. I'm not sure what's going on with Daryl's end over there. But anyway, another thing that's changed, though, just to throw this out there, because like you said, Brian, you are a little bit younger. For those of us that were raised earlier on, us Gen Xers, whether we're I see you, Daryl. You're definitely on video. And I've got your mic open on the switchboard for Blog Talk, but you're not coming across. It's almost like your phone is muted. Or maybe your headset turned off. I don't know. Try checking your headset connection. But when we were growing up, it was still traditional that the dads worked and the moms stayed home. But what's happened over time is wages stagnated. Inflation has continued. Pay raises have stayed below inflation for decades upon decades until it became necessary in a lot of households, became necessary for both parents to work in order to bring in enough income to afford a modest family home in a relatively safe environment. And the parents are, they are busy a lot. And a lot of them aren't just working 40-hour weeks. A lot of them are working, you know, side gigs and part-time jobs and everything else. And I feel like I think that has played a big thing. And I won't get into also the breakdown of the traditional family, the nuclear family, the effect of divorce and step-parents and modern feminism and how it all ties together in a reduction in the level of discipline of children as they're growing up these days. But yeah, there have been a lot of changes. And I know, Brian, I know you well enough to know you have what would be considered a more traditional household. I don't want to make Dad upset.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah. I have a traditional household. But now I'll make this caveat. I'm not trying to judge anybody. If Mama and Daddy work outside the house, that's their business. It's none of mine. I don't care. It's not my business. But on the other side of the coin, don't tell me that it's not possible. Yes, it is. You're just not going to Tahiti every summer. I know. You're not going to Tahiti. But the fact of the matter is the reason that my wife and I have the lifestyle we have is because there are certain sacrifices that we make. We don't have new cars. We'll never have a new car, partly because I don't want to take a depreciation, and the other part is we just can't afford it. We don't get to go on extravagant vacations. We don't have the nicest of X, Y, and Z. But on the other side of the coin, Mama's at home all the time. priorities thing, in my opinion. It is a massive priority
right.
thing. If
I
you,
think that definitely makes a difference.
Exactly. And so, like I said, I'm not trying to judge, so I don't want anybody to take it that way. But if your priority is to have the two Bentleys out front, then, yeah, you both better damn well be working. If your priority is to have a massive house that, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a month in mortgage, then yeah, you both better well be working. But if your priorities are a little bit more modest and your priorities are in a more traditional setting, then no, you don't really have to do that. But like I said, each their own. You choose the lifestyle you want. You let me choose the lifestyle I want. Just don't make fun of my wife because, you know, she's a stay-at-home wife and watches Days of Our Lives and eats Bon Buns. I'm fairly certain that's what she does. I don't know. I'm not home. I don't know. But, you know.
I would not want to be you the next time you go home if she's listening to this. That's all I'm saying. I think she could take you. I mean, I've met both of you. I think she could take you.
Yeah, my money would be on her, too. I mean, hell, she's already pulled a gun on me twice. She'll do it again.
Don't say that on YouTube.
Sorry.
Okay, Daryl.
I still can't hear Daryl.
Okay, Daryl, why don't you try hanging up from Blog Talk. Call him back in. I'll open your mic again, and hopefully we can reestablish your connection. We can see you on video. We definitely see you. We just can't hear you on Blog Talk. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know any of that.
I'm gonna drop you, Daryl, and then I want you to call back in.
I wonder if it's not his headset, but he seems to be responding like he can hear us. So
I know he can hear us. It's obvious from looking at his reactions on the screen there that he's hearing us. We just aren't hearing him for a reason. This is weird.
I don't know.
Yeah, you know, these technical difficulties, they always plague us in some way. And we can definitely, all right, back on the Blog Talk switchboard. Let's open up his mic. All right, we'll give it a test. Daryl? We hear you now.
You can hear me now?
We hear you now.
Time.
We got you now.
All right. I don't know what the heck happened. First, my phone just all of a sudden clipped off. My mic clipped off. And then now I'm trying to jump on. I'm like, what the heck? Then the phone didn't want to turn on. I'm like, did I run out of power? It's a new phone. Plug it in. It's enough power. And then, yeah, technology sucks at times. That's all I got to say. It's like the electronic logbook. It sucks. I'm glad
you
can hear me
now. Talking about technology, have you guys heard about this new BS they're trying to come out with? Like on our trucks, we have the DPF garbage. They're trying to put a GPF on passenger vehicles now.
Yeah, no. because they want to try to go back. What they want to try to do is, I think Pooter Judge or the bag, wherever Pooter Puke, whatever his name is, the man that I think he can breastfeed. He wants to charge everyone for every single mile they drive. That's what he wants to do. So that's why they're trying to do that, so then they can track it.
Actually, that's not
that,
true.
That's part
that's
of
true.
It.
What he really wants to do is he wants to put a tracker on everybody's car, and he's using the whole you should pay for every mile you drive on the public roads as the argument for why they could justify tracking your move. And I'm not going to say nothing, but there was a few of us stupid truck drivers several years ago that tried to warn people if they are tracking our every move, it's only a matter of time before they're tracking yours. And of course, we were told we were a bunch of crazy tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists when we said that. And now here we are trying to push it through Congress. And I bet you, of all the people that laughed at me and all of the others that, tried to say that, I bet not one of us gets one person that acknowledges that, oh, yeah, you know, you were completely fucking right about that.
That's a slippery slope argument. That's slippery slope, and as we know, those things never happen. It's just not possible.
No, oh, the government never used the door technique to just, you know, take more rights away.
It's a slippery slope, but they're going to try it because you know you're going to have some of these people. Like for the electric cars, nothing against electric cars. If you want to have them, I don't care. But they make it seem like I heard some movie star, he's saying, well, it makes me feel, along with these other movie stars, it makes me feel like I'm contributing or doing something. And I'm like, okay, you do know that it takes fossil fuel to make electricity that you're plugging into the grill because it's not all coming from the all being clean. And that the elements from for the cobalt coming from Africa, which those are coming from mines, which is modern-day slavery. So, you know, when people sit back and they say, like, for instance, you know, Chris, you know, a long time ago truckers were telling them, this is just for us. It's going to come to you sooner or later, and here it is. And all those people that called you crazy and all these other names that you can think of, you think they really going to have enough balls and be adult enough? Let me use this word again. Adult enough to come to you and say, you know what, I'm sorry, you were freaking right. No, they're not. That's just like these legislators that we have. They don't know how to say, you know what, like during the open border, maybe we messed up. Maybe we shouldn't have done that, and let's close the border. No, they just make excuses.
Well, that's the whole flower thing, of course. They're trying to overwhelm the budget. I mean, they're trying. My opinion,
yes,
based on a lot of things, and for all the people running around talking about conspiracy theorists or just people that have internet access, I've been researching a lot of the things I talked about long before the internet existed. So, no, it's not just because I have internet access. I knew about the Cloward Piven plan long before the internet. Thank you very much. I knew who Saul Alinsky was. I knew who had ties to him that is very powerful and influential in Washington, D.C. now, long before the internet existed. So, no, it's not just because we have internet access. So, get over yourself. Some of us actually did research the old-fashioned way, through things like the congressional record and other such features well before the internet was around. So the Cloward-Piven plan, of course, the eight-step process for destroying a capitalist nation and converting it into a socialist or communist nation. One of the big things it calls for is basically the collapse of the capitalist economy. You have to overwhelm the system. And one of the big ways they do that is by inflating the budgets to unsustainable levels, which we're definitely seeing right now, and overwhelming the welfare system, right, the entitlement benefits, getting millions of people across the border and paying all kinds of money to cover their presence here is definitely one of the ways in which you overwhelm the economic system, and it's playing out. So as we can see, there's protests going on in Chicago right now over the migrant camps that are popping up in Chicago to deal with all these border crossers that are now coming into Chicago. And it's amazing to see all these Chicago liberals scream tolerance. It's amazing to see them just losing their shit over this immigration crisis when they're dealing with like 1/1000th of a percentage of the problem that the border states are having. But yeah, it's actually been kind of entertaining to see their sudden shift in tolerance. But then again, that's also out of the playbook of dividing us, because what I'm seeing now is now between the immigration stuff, right, where they're taking the border crossers and shipping them into sanctuary cities, where they're finding that the sanctuary cities aren't so welcoming anymore. Between that and the whole Hamas-Israel conflict, they are now starting to divide the left amongst itself. When you really look back at the last several years, there's so many things at play. They have effectively turned men against women, straight against gay. They've even divided the LGBTQ community. They got them fighting amongst themselves over the trans movement and a lot of the things that are going on there. They've got rich versus poor, white versus everybody, everybody else versus everybody else. I mean, they have done quite the job of dividing us, like all the way across the board, and they just keep teaming on. I don't know. It all kind of reminds me of the movie, it's a Stephen King movie called Needful Things. And watching this all play out really, really reminds me of that movie. If you're not familiar with that movie, essentially the character ended up being, you know, Lucifer. But he moved into this town. He figured out everybody's biases, who liked who didn't like who, and who was in the and turned their own greed and their own bias, and he really fine-tuned it, and he literally like had this entire town at war with each other, and that's what I see going on. But it's like on a world stage, like we've got the whole world divided up into little groups just wanting to kill each other. I don't know. Am I way off base here?
Go ahead, Brian.
There's a song. I don't know if you guys have heard it. I want to say the singer is Roy Acuff, but I know that ain't right. But the song, name of it is If I Were the Devil.
I know it.
And the first line of it, I think, is something like, if I were the devil, I'd tell you what I'd do. I'd come across like I ever gave a damn about you. Anyway, it's this talk about this notion of what he would do in order if he was the devil. And one of the things he talks about is he'd take the wolves and make them fight each other, because once the wolves have killed each other, sheep are what I want, you know, the sheep, and then have the sheep stir up the pot and so on and so forth. In essence, kind of what we see going on right now. You know, you have these people that are fighting each other who actually can do damage. And then everybody else is just stirred up against everybody else. Now, it seems interesting to me that kind of stuff would happen. I mean, it is kind of the Cloud and Piven model. You know, you take our rules and use them against us, our own I lost my train of thought, seeing Chris go away. But you take our own standards and move use them against us, and then what ends up happening is we're stuck. You know, are we the land of the free? Are we the land that welcomes people? Then why aren't you welcoming these other people? And then we overwhelm the system with welfare and so on and so forth. A great example of this is look at California. That's where I was born, is California. We have an open border system in the country. You know that California is the most progressive state in the union. It's also the state that has the highest level of income inequality. Why? I mean,
do tell.
It's because they have an open society. Come on in, we'll give you shit for free. Come on in. It doesn't matter. And So you have all of these people from all over the country that will go to California with their hand out. Now, I'm not saying every immigrant that comes to this country legally or illegally is coming with their hand out. That's not what I'm arguing. That's not what I'm saying. But you cannot have a system in which you are given money for existing and then welcome anybody and everybody into that system. Because what you're going to end up doing is you're going to end up having a class of people that just exist off the dole. And you're going to have another class of people that have everything. And they're the ones that pay for everything. You want to talk about the rich being super rich? Well, okay, that might be. But you have to understand the super rich are also paying for the welfare. They're paying for the food stamps. They're paying for the road. They're paying for everything. So I'm not – please understand, I'm not trying to defend Mark Zuckerberg or you know, all those people. But let's call a spade here. They're the ones paying for everything. They get privileges. I'm not saying it's right or wrong that they get some of those privileges. And then you have all these other people. They don't have money. They don't have an education. They have nothing. And they vote the way that they're told to. Hey, if you vote for that person, it's going to suck. They're going to take away your right. They're going to take away not your rights. They're going to take away your money. You didn't earn, by the way. And they're going to make you get a job. Nobody wants that. Well, okay. Some people don't want that. And so that's what you have in California. You have this underclass who they don't work for anything. And you have the super wealthy that are paying all the bills.
But then you also – the person you're talking about is Kobe Acuff that made that song. Now, Paul Harvey also had a that he had a speech on that. That was pretty cool, too. It went – the same way as that song. And, you know, the funny thing is about, and you're right, because, see, the thing is, and I blame a lot of this on these legislators that sit back. The way they earn their money is through all of us. We pay their salary. They make it seem like we don't. And you have these sanctuary cities like here in Colorado, which, you know, and again, I have, and you talk to, of the Americans, they have no problem with immigration. They have to do it by the law and do it by the book, because we have people that does that. But then you have these people in power, you know, like Polis and some of these, and the mayor of Denver, for one, and then you have the, and I'm sorry, I'm going to call a spade, the Democratic Party that's in our legislators that says, you know what, we're going to welcome everybody. But now you have the mayor of Denver. He's crying because, well, we're running out of room. We're running out of resources. But you welcome them all here. You have a governor who has his head so far up Biden's butt. It's pathetic. So he's like, come on, bring everybody. But then now, and this links to everything about our crime going up, because now here it is, we have a school system that's overwhelmed, which we don't have enough teachers. We have kids that are here that can't speak English or very little English. So what does that do with the kids who are citizens here? What does that do to them? And then also you have a health care issue, okay? You have a lot of them. Again, they don't have jobs. They don't speak English. They come over. And the healthcare system, they're not going to say, well, we can't take care of you. They're going to take care of them. So you have that part. And then you have where they say, welcome you. But it's kind of funny. They'll welcome them. But what neighborhoods are going to put them in? They're putting them in for white neighborhoods. They're putting them in neighborhoods of color. But you don't see them pulling them in into the rich neighborhood. I don't see Polis. You know, there's a called Meeker. He has this great big mansion up there. I don't see him putting any of the illegal, the people that he's bringing over that hasn't come through the correct way. I don't see him bringing them over to his house that he's taking care of them. Yet, he sits back and tells the mayor of Denver, you know what, get all these homeless people and anybody who's here, get them off our lawn and make barriers. Then that way the rest of y'all just have to deal with it. But yet, again, you look at these legislators, they'll go ahead and they started this. they started, they pulled the LGB, because if you talk to the majority of people of the LGB community, they don't want none of this. They want to be left alone. Phil wants to be with Mike. Sheila wants to be with Mary. We just want the pursuit of happiness. Don't want nobody messing with us. Leave us alone. But you got the politics that brings them all in. And a thing with the trans thing, you know, that's a whole different subject where we're looking at. It's like, okay, get back to basics, because there's not 10,000. Sorry, there's not. You know, if you're got these teachers saying, well, if you want to be a frog, you can be a frog. No, you're not a frog. You wasn't born a frog. You're a freaking human being. You're a boy or you're a girl. That's a subject we can go on later on. But it's just point being, we have these political people that brings all this in, and unfortunately, we have radical people this back, and they blow it out of proportion, and then by the time it gets out of control, they don't have enough nerve to say, hey, this is getting out of hand and stupid. Let's stop this and let's tone it down. What do? They keep it up for some reason, and doesn't make any sense. So all these people coming over into our society, like you said, Bikerson, they're there to overwhelm our system. And me, I'm tired of paying for it. I know you're tired of paying for it. Rich folks are tired of paying for it. But unfortunately, for some reason, we can't get the connection that maybe we need to get rid of some of these people that are in power, try to get back to normal, because this has gone way out of control. My thought.
You know, right. It's kind of an unrelated notion, but I'm anti-abortion. I'm pro-life. Okay, now I'm not. That's not the topic I want to, you know, talk about. But every time somebody finds that out about me, and they're on the other side of the aisle, they always want to throw something in my face, and that's, well, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? They never even would stop to think, maybe I did. Maybe, just maybe, I am spending a large portion of my disposable income to help some of this. Maybe I'm spending a large portion of my time to some of this. Just because I don't foster or adopt doesn't mean I'm not helping. Here's what I want to throw back at some of these people. They keep saying, we need to open up our homes. We need to, or not our homes, but we need to open up our country. We need to help these poor migrants. You first. Open your house. Not mine. Your house. Open up your wallet first. Put your money where your mouth is. And then we can talk. But until then, until Nancy Pelosi opens up her ginormous house to all of these migrants and all of these homeless in California, I don't want to hear from you. You don't have anything to tell me. Until you do that,
exactly.
Just be quiet. And I'll say it again. A country without a border is not a country at all.
Thank you. Thank you.
They don't want borders.
Say
again?
They don't want borders because they don't want nations.
No, they don't want nations because they want to stay in power.
They want... No. What they want, they're appealing to people's better senses, right? Of let's help out, you know, the poor, tired, huddled masses, right? They're appealing to people's senses, the good nature of people, in order to create a world that requires and will expedite the need for global governance. Because I'm here to tell you, the people that are trying to take the reins of the global power struggle are the very people you profess to have a problem with. They are the ultra capitalists. They are extremely rich. They are the global billionaires and trillionaires trying to amass global power amongst a few ultra-wealthy ultra-powerful people so that once they have that control, they can do whatever they want. Once they get you to sign on to this global utopia idea and give them all the power they're asking for, they aren't going to give two shits what you care about.
Yep.
And I'm telling you, I will say this straight up to the LGBTQ plus community. Once you hand over the power of unlimited control to these people, you're going to be the first on the chopping block of people they no longer care about. They are only using you to play on your emotions and get you to agree to this idea that we need to give this very, very small group of very rich, powerful people control of everything. And they're making promises to you that they are not going to keep. This has been played out over and over in history to a much smaller degree with the same result every time. You cannot give a small group of powerful people unlimited power. Not once in the history of the world has that worked out for the betterment of humanity. Not once. No matter what they promised. So, I wish people would understand that and would study history so that we could stop repeating it. But they don't.
You said two things there. The huddled masses, that quote that we have, the poem of the Statue of Liberty. Everybody loves to use that quote,
right,
especially when we talk about immigration, about the huddled masses yearning to be free, and they always misquote it because what they're implying is that we open up our doors for everybody, and anybody can come in. That's not what the original poem was saying. It's saying, you go ahead and give us your huddled masses. You go ahead and give us your dreads, and watch what we can do with them, because we're going to give them freedom, and they're going to become great. That's what that's saying. It's not
right.
saying we're open up for anybody and everybody. Just come on in. It's saying, you give us your worst, and we're going to show you what the human potential is once they have freedom. The other thing, going very specifically to your point there, Bikerson, what's the difference between Nazi Germany and the USSR? Now, I know this is going to rattle some cages, and it's going to get some people really, really pissed, but what's the difference between the Nazi Germany and USSR? Anybody want
to
take a
guess? I mean, there's a few, but
other than Nazi Germany got some of their stuff from our Jim Crow laws.
Well, I mean, there is that. Yes, that is absolutely true. What I'm going for more is Nazi Germany was national socialism. We want socialism for our country, and it's only for
right.
our country. Leave us the hell alone. Well, not exactly. I mean, they kind of decided they wanted to take all of Europe as their country. And
yeah.
The USSR... we're global socialists. We want to export socialism everywhere. We want everybody to fall under sway of what we say is right and proper as a socialist nation.
Right.
Nazi Germany looked inward for their when it came to politics and so on and so forth. Russia looked outward. Think about that for just a second. They looked outward trying to export socialism and communism to the world. Yes, they're the same damn thing. Come at me, bro. I know. And so what we end up with now is, you know, that notion that, you know, we won the Cold War. Did we? We're more socialist today than we were 5 years ago. Hell, we're more socialist today than what we were 3 months ago. I mean, did we actually win the Cold War?
No.
Seems to me that Russia lost the war and won the peace, because I'll be damned if their way of doing things isn't creeping in everywhere. Just an odd thought there.
I agree.
Agree totally. I think they just surrendered and changed strategies, and went a little bit more underground with it for a while, and I think they knew they had already effectively planted the Trojan horse over here by taking control of a number of organizations. If you're not familiar with Yuri Bezmenov, the former KGB agent that defected back in the late 70s, early 80s, who went on, you have to forgive me, I don't remember what talk show it was he was on, one of the big talk shows of the time. He went on one of the big talk shows back then and revealed this plan that the KGB and the Soviet Union had in effect for subverting the U.S. through all sorts of social destabilization, taking control of various institutions, the education system, for example, and that if the U.S. wasn't careful, that it was going to be successful. And what you're seeing culminated now in the 2020s, it's creepy to go back and watch what Yuri Bezmenov was predicting for America's future way back in like 1983, realizing that he was a former KGB agent and is describing what we're seeing happening now. He was describing it 40 years ago, saying this is America's future and what's going to happen. The fact that that plan continued despite the fall of communism and the fall of the Soviet Union in 1989, or I think it was 89, November of 1989, tells me
91.
That... 91. Was it 91?
I thought it was
no. 91.
I thought it was 91.
I thought it was 89, maybe 90. I really feel like it was November of 89. I'm sure there's some fact checkers out there that'll fill us in. But
yeah.
Anyway, it's just creepy to go back and watch that interview from 40 years ago and recognize that he told us this is what's going to happen. And lo and behold, it's here now. But I see that it is now 8:30. I do want to move us on to our final topic of the evening, which is inflation is theft. And I know Brian's going to have a lot of input on this. And there's a reason I say that inflation is theft. Inflation is nothing new, okay? If you go back a little over 100 years ago, about 114 years ago to be exact, take a look at the 1909 Sears and Roebuck catalog. You could buy a stagecoach in 1909. You could buy a stagecoach for 10 cents. 10 cents. That's
buy it
what,
or rent it?
No, buy it. You could buy a stagecoach for 10 cents. Right? And the point I'm getting at is that obviously for something however many hours of work a stagecoach represented back in 1909, all that work was valued at 10 cents. I know that some people that were in the military back in the 1960s, and I'm wanting to say they made something like $175 a month or something ridiculous like that back then. Inflation is nothing new. It's been a continuous thing throughout our entire economy. The powers that be, they understand a thing or two about inflation. They know what causes it. It's not a mystery. And so, essentially, when we have inflation, it's really a transfer of wealth. Because what happens when we go through a period of inflation, right? Whatever money you currently hold, let's say that you are a person that is thrifty, in nature, and you have put a bunch of money in savings. What happens to the value of your savings when you go through a period of inflation? The actual value of your savings, the actual buying power, it decreases, right? I mean, imagine if someone had $100 in a savings account 50 years ago. That was pretty good money. Go back even further, you know, 75 years ago, $100 in a bank account. That was pretty big. Obviously, it's like, you know, one family dinner, you know, at Chili's now. The value of your savings goes down, but it's not just the value of your savings. It's not just the value of your earnings. What also happens is the value of your debts, right, also decreases. So think about if you had bought a house in 2000, right, 23 years ago, almost 24 years ago. Let's say you had bought that home for $100,000 back then, and your monthly mortgage payment was $800. Just throwing some numbers out there. Chances are at that time, when you bought that home in the year 2000, that $800 a month mortgage payment was probably a pretty big chunk of your income, assuming that it was 25% of your income. You know, then that means you were probably only bringing in a little over $3,000 a month in household income in order to be able to afford an $800 a month mortgage. Well, now let's move forward to 2023. Assuming your mortgage probably went up a little bit because of adjustments in property taxes and insurance, but that $800, maybe it went up to $1,000 or $1,100. That number now is a much smaller percentage of your household budget versus what it was in the year 2000 because of inflation, right? Inflation basically reduced the value of the debt. It reduced the impact of that debt on your overall financial situation. Well, now imagine you're a big corporation, right? You got millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, maybe even $1 billion or more in debt that you owe to banks, various organizations. And as inflation creeps in, being a big corporation, of course, you immediately adjust your prices to reflect the current market, right? So your revenues go up with inflation, but your debts don't go up. And so that debt that made up a big percentage of your corporation's annual budget just 2 years ago, 3 years ago, well, that debt has stayed the same dollar-wise. The value of it's gone down. The percentage of that debt in your overall budget is now a much smaller percentage, right? Which you're making the money, you're bringing the money in because you're a big corporation, you've adjusted all your prices. But what have you done? You've still stagnated wages, right? So essentially, even though you're paying your employees the same or maybe slightly more, again, the percentage of your operating cost is going down. Big corporations getting more money, right? Your taxes are continuing to go up. That little bit of increase in pay that you get to adjust for inflation is also being reflected in a little bit bigger tax payment, right? So the government's still getting theirs. The corporations are getting theirs. Your buying power is going down. The corporation's buying power, it's not. It's not going down at all. In fact, it's increased because their debt service has gone down, right? The government, it's reaping the tax benefits from those corporations and also off of your slight raise in revenue. And so the not the actual dollar amount, but the buying power, the power of the dollars is being transferred upward. The government still got it. They're still getting their share. The corporations, the banks, they are seeing record profits, right? Their buying power isn't increasing. Your buying power is decreasing. Inflation is theft because they know what causes it, and they do it anyway, and they do it because of the impact it has. It's just another transfer of wealth being forced onto you against your will, essentially coming up with a really cool legal trickery way of stealing from you without you actually realize you're being stolen from. Change my mind, Brian.
I can't change your mind, but I'm going to actually hopefully enforce your point a little bit clearer. Talk about corporations and so on and so forth. There's a little trick that you can do in the stock market that corporations can do. It's called splitting the stock. In essence, what happens, because once the stock is out there, they can't issue more stock unless they own more stock. But what they can do if they want to drop the price of that stock is split every single stock into four or whatever way you want to do it. But what ends up happening is every single stock is split equally. So let's say you own one stock in Walmart, for instance, and they're deciding that they're going to split stock because they want to lower their stock price for whatever reason. And there are some market reasons why you might want to lower the stock.
Right.
So what they could do is they decide that they're going to split it into 10 different ways. You only own one share. You own one share of Walmart stock. Then they split every stock by 10. So now instead of owning one share, you now instead own 10 shares. And that's completely legal.
Right.
That's a way in which they can lower the price of their stock and create more shares. Now, if Walmart were to decide that they wanted to lower the price of the stock, and the way that they know to lower the price is to create more stock, they just issued more stock and threw it out there, that's illegal. That's a crime. And they will have the federal government come down on them like a ton of bricks. Now,
right.
Here's an interesting notion, and to think about it. Your dollar is that's in essence what it is. It is a valuation based on how much of that represents the country. What the government does is instead of splitting the value, saying okay, now every single dollar is now worth $10. It's like the every one stock is now 10 stocks. They just issue more stock. What would send the executive at Walmart to prison for 20, 30, 40 years is exactly what they are doing. I absolutely agree. It's theft.
Yep.
What we need to do is tie it to some precious metal, tie it to gold, tie it to silver, tie it to copper, tie it to nickel. I don't care. Hell, we could tie it to charcoal. I don't care, but a solid something is that we can actually sit down and count, not this nebulous fiat garbage that's just all zeros and ones in a computer somewhere. That doesn't work. This is what happens. So I'm not going to change your mind. I'm not even going to try. I agree with you entirely.
How about it, Daryl?
Well, I ain't going to change your mind because I agree with you. For Brian, what you said earlier, it was when we were talking about Russia, it was December 25th, 1991, so he was right. Like you said, one of the things, and I'm glad you brought it up, Brian, people need to learn how to start investing because, you know, there's strategies that you can use to help combat this. And what I've always said is that these rich people, just like us, they need to be accounted for. If somebody's doing something like Walmart, like you said, the example that you gave, that Walmart did something that was illegal, okay, how come nothing's being done about it? You know, and I think we got so far past that where, you know, it's just like, yeah, you know what, let's keep the common working people ignorant as hell. And the rich folks, we'll go ahead, we'll educate ourselves, and we'll do things and get away with it. Because, you know, you have ways that you can prepare for inflation. You know, there's four different ways, you know, that I can come up with. You know, you can sit back and look at your budget and scale back your spending. So, you know, if you used to be buying buying Converse, if you can't Air Jordans, freaking buy them. Buy something else. Who cares what people think? You know, start saving what you can. Save you little pennies and stuff. You know, delay buying expensive purchases. Y'all don't need a new car. You don't buy one. You know, I bought one new vehicle before, and I leased it. I will never freaking lease again. But, I mean, I don't want nothing new. None of my vehicles are new. They're all used. And I like it that way because, like you said, don't pay for the depreciation, you know, and you own it. You don't pay finance charges or anything else. It's one less thing you have to worry about. And another thing to help inflation, another thing that you said, Brian, is to invest. People, you got to start looking at that. But they don't teach that in school. They want you to be ignorant. So you can't sit back and do that. And I will say this for my race on some things. Like with my mom, she was poor. She back in the day, her mother, a.k.a. my grandmother, 25 kids. You know, two sets of twins died. You know, they can't work. The only place they can work was in field. Mama, she doesn't know a daggone thing about finances or any of that. She never taught us that. I never knew about investing or anything until way later in my life. And then it's like, how come no one taught me this earlier? Because there's some things I'm beginning to learn about this. And I'm like, okay, you know what? This will help me to stay off depending on the government. This also helped me to invest in America. And we need to start teaching our kids that. We've got away from history. We got away from teaching our kids regular-ass math. And then we don't even teach them anything about how the banking system go, the monetary system go, and investing. And I think we have more people that was educated on this. I think we will help to combat it, but unfortunately we don't, because we have too many people right now worried about a freaking handout from the government, and they want to stay dumb and stupid. As they said on The Matrix, ignorance is bliss, and that's what a lot of people are doing. So, Biker said, my man, I agree with you. There's nothing I can say to say anything opposite, and Brian, I agree with you too.
Well, there you have it. Inflation is
out. I'll go one step further, though, with that.
I haven't heard a libertarian say that inflation is stuff, but I have heard them say that inflation is actually just a tax. So I guess in a roundabout way, you take it full circle.
I was going to say I'll go a step further because I would say that taxation is theft in and of itself. Of course, I'm a libertarian, so there you go.
Well, but since you're a libertarian, thing is, you're a libertarian, but I get along with you. And, you know, I think the titles of everything, I mean, to me, they're not really important to me. How come people just can't sit back and just talk? Because a lot of things that you agree with, that you say, I agree with. Some things I said, you agree with. You know, and all this division, I'm sorry, to me, that's just plain ignorance, hatred, and foolishness. And a lot of these people, they got egos so damn big that if someone tells facts to them and said, look, what someone just told you was a complete lie, and then you'll sit around and say, no, it wasn't. And your feelings got hurt. You got to go in the corner and grab a diaper and get into a safe place and put a safety pin in and suck your damn thumb. You know, it irritates the daylights out of me that people just cannot sit down and just talk to each other. You know, it's like, well, if you are a libertarian, you think this. No, not all libertarians think like that. If you're a Democrat, you think like, no, not all Democrats think like that. That's why the left is going crazy now, because there's a lot of people that are Democrats. They're like, what are you people doing? We're not into this. But it seems like the most radical people is the one that gets their that the news love to go ahead and talk about, but the people who got some common sense that left this nation and sits back and says, you know what, I just showed where you went wrong at, right here. The news don't want to pay that.
Well, I'll be honest. I use labels to help classify things so that I can make things straight in my mind. But at the end of the day, you know, the label is just there as a tool, and it's a structure. And at the end of the day, if you come at me and you, well, let's say that you say that you're a Democrat. Now, I've got a frame in mind that I think – I'm not saying you are because I know better.
I know.
But, you know, okay, as a Democrat, I think that you're going to believe this, this, and this, and this. And then we sit down and have a conversation. And, wait a minute, you don't believe – okay, well, then I got to change my opinion about what you believe. That's fine. But I use it basically so I can form some sort of structure so I can talk to you. The other thing of it, though, is I always come to a conversation expecting the other person knows something I don't.
Yeah.
So I want to hear what anybody says because they may know something I don't, and I want to know. All three of us are drive trucks. I get to do the fun stuff sometimes not so much. And I've been doing this for more than a decade. You know, there's still people out here who've only been driving for 6 months, and they go, hey, can I show you something? Absolutely. Fucking Lucy, because you might know something I don't. I don't care that you just got your first job at Swift. If you know something I don't, I want to know because it could be helpful. So, you know, that notion of labels and having discussion, look, a label is a tool. And if you can't use it as a tool, then don't use it at all. But more importantly, if you can't sit down with somebody, show them common decency, common respect, and expect that they know something you don't, even if they don't. Because I've had conversations with people that didn't know a damn thing. But I still treated them as if they might know something I don't. And I think that's the way that we move forward. Libertarian, Democrat, Republican, apostopharian, whatever. You sit down and expect the other person to know something you don't. And I think that's what we're missing a lot of.
Listening to each other.
Yeah.
Stop doing that.
I'm sorry, what'd you say?
You said listening to each other. We stopped doing that. You know, just like some people on Facebook, if you mention something and then they come at you and the only thing they can do is curse and belittle you, to me, that just tells me, okay, you have no facts. You have nothing underneath. Well, that's not even just Facebook. That's just people ordinarily. Mm-hmm. You know, if you come at someone and they come with you and they're telling you, okay, this is what my beliefs are, da-da-da-da. But then your response is, you know, you're an idiot or da-da-da, you know, and all these stupid things of being hostile, then what makes you any better than anyone else? Because now you just showed your ignorance. You just showed that, you know, someone will try to talk to you, and even though you may not agree with you, Brian, like you said, you may educate it a little bit because maybe they'll get mad at you, but in their head, they're probably still thinking maybe a day later, maybe an hour later, they're thinking about what you said. It's like, oh, maybe let me look into this. But the person that sit back and the only thing they do is, you know, they just yell out names and anything negative. To me, that's one of our major issues. And again, we don't have people who want to just sit down and talk. Back in the day, we used to be able to talk. Even though you didn't like anything, we talked about it. Either you had a debate or we sat there and we talked about it. We agreed to disagree. And then we move on. Now, we got people that, you know, they're so worried about their daggone feelings and mommy and daddy didn't toughen up their skin to say, hey, not everybody's going to agree with you. Hey, not everybody are winners. There are winners. There are losers. You know what? Do some research. Everybody got so used to Google where nobody does this thing called sit down and read a freaking book. You know, do a little bit of research, you know, instead of saying, well, my friend said this, so I'm going to agree with my friend. But did you research it? No, I'm just going to read it with my friend, and then I'm just going to call you an idiot because you're thinking opposite of me.
Worse than that is I believe X because some celebrity said X. That, I think, is absolutely the worst. It's
so, celebrity lived their own life.
Yeah, it's like that individual that's making $100 million for 6 days of work can relate to you perfectly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is what it is. But we need to sit down, talk to each other. Maybe we can figure some of this stuff out. Yeah, I'm a libertarian, and I'm a hardcore constitutional libertarian. If it's not the Constitution, government can't do it. I'm an absolutist on a lot of things. And there are other people that are not. And we can come to the middle, and we can figure out solutions that we both can at least live with for the time being and move forward. But you can't do that when you assume something. Chris was talking, this is when you dropped out, about if we go to Home Depot and get a paint swatch or whatever, color match our skin, most of us are going to be some shade of brown. I'm going to disagree with you on that, Chris, because if I lift my shirt up, you're going to see I am damn neon white. But be that as it may.
Your face is red. Rose.
Yeah, my face is a little bit red. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. But my chest, I am neon white, okay?
Pale brown.
What I think is so funny is a lot of people will hear the way I talk and so on and so forth and automatically jump to a conclusion, and they don't know a damn thing about me. They have no idea that I have a niece and a nephew that are African-American. They have no idea that I have a niece that is an actual Chinese immigrant. It's like,
let me ask you this,
guys.
Brian, I know you have to print out permits and stuff in your truck. Do you have a piece of typing or printer paper?
Yes, I do.
Grab it.
Oh, dear Lord. This is going to end poorly, isn't it, Chris?
I'm holding a white card next to my skin. That's it.
What you want to do here?
This is a fun exercise. I'm a little bit
What
red.
You want me to do with the paper? Oh, okay.
What is it?
I'm getting some sun. There you go. Hold it up next to you.
Well, hold on. Let's be fair.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my eyes. I got to get my
You thought I was kidding.
I want to be fair. Daryl, do you have some printer paper?
I am a Hershey chocolate brown, and I'm proud of it. I ain't black. I ain't black like charcoal. I am brown like a Hershey chocolate bar. Brown. Now, when I went overseas, over to the Middle East when I was deployed, I got almost like Wesley Snipes. I was dark. I was dark.
But see, at the end of the day, I don't care that I am the same damn shade as a piece of paper or the color of a chocolate. I don't care. It's like, at the end of the day, it's like, what do you think, what do you believe, how are you as a person? That's the point. It's, what are you as a person? Just because I scorch and I turn into a damn lobster if I stand outside in a full moon does not mean I'm a good person or a bad person.
Thank you. So we all agree. I mean, the shade of your skin is pretty pointless. It's irrelevant. It all comes down to what do you do in your skin? That's the important part.
Yeah, it's not the color of your skin. It's what you do in your skin. I mean,
exactly.
The only relevant part of my skin color is during the summer I end up having to buy a shit ton of aloe because I burn like a damn lobster. But, I mean, other than that, so what?
My tan is always savage, so there you go. I can throw some at you. So let's see, kind of help you out.
I wish you could. I really do wish you could. Oh, because I'll tell you what, man, burning like a damn lobster, that's not fun. And I work outside. It doesn't work.
Well, I got burnt twice. I did get burnt. I did get a sunburn before. So, but that was on stupidity. One time I was outside swimming in the ocean, 3 hours of body surfing. Then I thought it was a great idea, me and a friend of mine, thought it was a great idea to go out and do sand volleyball for about 3 or 4 hours. And I found out later that wasn't a good idea.
I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it is what it is.
Yep, you know? Yes, and I can't swim.
Well, there you go.
Chrissy's just
there
laughing
you go,
at
you. I know two white boys that can't swim, so there you go. Mama won't let me pick him up and just pitch him in the pool. So we got to baby him or some shit. I don't know. So, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Well, the only reason I learned how to swim, because when I was in the Air Force, where I was stationed up in Lawrence, Maine, to where there's a lot of lakes up there, and a lot of people were drowning, and they just say, hey, you know what? If you want swimming lessons, by all means, you can have them for free. And I took advantage of it because I ain't going to lie. I was one of those brothers that got in the water and said, it's 3 feet. I'm good. Now it's like, I can't see the bottom. I'm good. You know, and I taught that with my son too. You know, I told my son, I said, if you take swimming lessons, dad will take swimming lessons with you. And we continue that. And then next thing you know, my son learns how to swim. He gets his best friend, which I call him my kid. They learn how to swim. And then they find the tallest diving board and look at me and say, come on, Dad, let's go. And, of course, you know, Dad has to go do it because my kids did it. And I ain't going to lie, I got at the edge of that diving board. I'm like, oh, yeah. But after that first dive, oh, it was home. Me and my kids all the time. So,
fear of water or fear of heights?
No, fear of water. Because back in the day when I grew up, and I lived in this town called Sterling, and in Rock Falls, Sterling and Rock Falls was kind of together. They were separated by a bridge, and this bridge has this river going through it, and a lot of people have drowned in that river. So, you know, with that fear of people drowning, my folks, they couldn't swim, and it really wasn't initiated for me to learn how to swim because we didn't have a boat or anything. So I always had that. I had a fear of going in deep water. If I could see the bottom, I'm cool. If I'm standing in it and my waist is above it, I'm cool. And I was like that the whole time. Did I always wanted to swim? Yes. I was always curious about it because I like to swim. And it just happened I have this opportunity when I was stationed in the Air Force, and they say, hey, we're going to give you free swimming lessons if you want it, and big Olympic-sized swimming pool. I did that, and man, I'm so glad that I did it, and I wish more people take that advantage because, I mean, there's a time a friend of mine had a houseboat. We're off the lake, and people jumping off the back like they do in the country songs, and I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a lot of fun because I was doing it too, and, dude, I mean, I am so glad I know how to swim. There's so many things that opened up to me. Can I do, you know, I need to learn how to swim a little better, which I'm going to do, but I am so glad that I learned how to swim. It was just one of those things in my culture. You ain't swimming.
Yeah, I learned how to swim a very, very different way.
It'll help you in this period of global boiling where flooding is a regular thing. And you know what? Guys, we're out of time. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you at the next one. I'm actually going to roll the outro video here. On the video streaming. So to those of you on Blog Talk, thank you, as always, for being a part of our audience. And, we'll see you all at the next show.
Woo! Ride that pony!
Is the show still going?
I think it's off.
Oh, okay.
He's just doing his thing. Let's see. Stream. But now we're left on our stream, but we just do it in 2 hours.